Welcome to the IPF edition of Rare Disease Advisor's Rare Care Podcast, offering unique perspectives from researchers, clinicians, and influencers from the pulmonary fibrosis community.
Hello, and welcome to the Rare Care Podcast. This is your host, Larry Luxner, Senior Correspondent for Rare Disease Advisor. And today, I'm in Albuquerque, New Mexico. My guest is Karen Smoot, an ambassador for the Chicago-based Pulmonary Fibrosis Foundation. Originally from Pittsburgh, Karen moved out here in 1984, and in 2011, she was diagnosed with idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis, or IPF. In addition, in 2019, she received a diagnosis of pulmonary arterial hypertension, or PAH. Karen is here to tell us her amazing story.
Thank you. Thank you, Larry.
So I'm not sure where to start, but let's just start with the basics. Tell us about your life, what you have done as a profession, and what brings you to New Mexico.
I came to New Mexico from Salt Lake City, and I knew that I loved Salt Lake City and I loved the Southwest. So when my second husband had decided to take a position in New Mexico, that's why we moved from Salt Lake. I've worked in the healthcare industry since I moved to New Mexico. I worked for Presbyterian, which is a very large hospital system. And more recently, for over 18 years, I worked for Blue Cross Blue Shield. And I was the vice president of provider network. In 2011, I was still working for Blue Cross. I didn't retire until I was in 2016. And when I was working, I was fortunate enough to have a primary care physician that knew me very well because I would see her once a year and we usually ended up talking about her contract with Blue Cross rather than anything that was wrong with me. So she knew I was fine. So when I started to develop symptoms that I thought were relatively minor at that time, I was coughing and I was a little short of breath when I walked up to the fourth floor where my boss, the president of the company was. I was out of breath and I started to lose a lot of weight. So I thought they were, in the scheme of things, I thought they were minor symptoms.
Were you ever a smoker?
Never a smoker.
And you had no other obvious lifestyle factors?
No, and because when my PCP determined that I had something wrong, but she couldn't pinpoint it, then I went to National Jewish in Denver. They asked me all of those other questions, was I ever around asbestos? Did I have birds? They asked me if I had birds. Or did I have a hot tub? Because there's some algae in the hot tub that could cause that. And birds are notorious for causing respiratory disease if you have. So they asked me all those questions and finally came to the conclusion that it was idiopathic in nature, my pulmonary fibrosis.
So basically with IPF, there really is no known cause.
No.
It's not environmental. It's not genetic. It's not lifestyle.
Right. If there is a known cause, then it's not IPF. It may be pulmonary fibrosis. You may have scarring of your lungs, but they know it's either you've had lung cancer or you have lung cancer and you have scarring of your lungs.
Right. Let's talk about this. Your symptoms evidently got worse.
Yes. Just more pronounced. It was harder to, I would go up. As I said, my boss was one floor above me and I always took the stairs. And I would get up in the stairwell and just had to breathe because I was worried that my boss may think I couldn't do my job. And I had a real critical job. And so I would just take deep breaths and I would catch my breath again and go in and see my boss. So, but the weight loss, I lost 22 pounds in a real short period of time. And the reason that my primary care physician and how the importance of early diagnosis is with this disease, because when I went to National Jewish, they said, if I didn't have the PCP that I had, it would have been 3 years before I would have been diagnosed correctly.
I'm not surprised because we know that patients with pulmonary fibrosis go through this long diagnostic journey.
Yes, absolutely. Because they think it's something else. And in New Mexico, we have a lot of people with asthma. They'll say it's asthma. So they'll give you the inhalers that don't do any good for pulmonary fibrosis. But patients dutifully try them because they want to feel better.
Because you don't have asthma.
Oh, right. You don't have asthma. And you don't have COPD, which affects a different portion of your lung.
And of course, COPD is very strongly associated with smoking.
Right. Yes, exactly. So when my... again, refer to the importance of early diagnosis. My primary care physician knew there was something wrong because I had just done 2 triathlons the years before when I was in my 60s. I had done triathlons and she kept saying, there has to be something wrong. You know, you've lost all this weight. I could have no more done an open water swim at that time.
So what was it that definitively nailed it for the diagnosis?
It was all of the, they did CTs and MRIs and blood work and other breathing tests, bronchoscopies and all of that at National Jewish. And they are renowned for their research in their database. You know, they have seen so many patients with different types of ILDs, of interstitial lung diseases, because there's over 150 different types. And so it takes someone like a National Jewish, or certainly there are pulmonologists that know this disease, but general pulmonologists, you know, aren't as schooled in defining that it's IPF. You know, and I remember mine here said, you have scarring on your lungs. It's pulmonary fibrosis, but I don't know why.
So how did they treat you?
When I went to National Jewish, what was prescribed at that time was mycophenolate, Cellcept. And that Cellcept, I have a friend, I have 2 friends that have kidney transplants. They take Cellcept because it's an anti-rejection drug. But at the time, that was the only thing they had, because the drugs now that are used for pulmonary fibrosis were available on the market in 2014.
Okay. And then in 2019, you were diagnosed with pulmonary arterial hypertension.
Right. Yes. I was diagnosed with PAH when I was in the hospital for a colon cancer surgery. And the colon cancer surgery went very well, and stage 2, no radiation, no chemo. But they said that the problematic feature of being in the hospital at that time was that my echo looked really poor. And so I then went to the pulmonologist who said, I think you have pulmonary hypertension. I'm going to send you to University of New Mexico to the pulmonary hypertension clinic. And then when I went to see the physician there, she was very good about knowing what insurance companies would pay for, because the drugs are very expensive. And she said, you have to have the defining indication of pulmonary hypertension is a right heart catheterization. So she had recommended, and her thought was that she really thought I had pulmonary hypertension, but that insurance companies may not pay for it unless it was a definitive diagnosis.
I understand. So it's pretty unusual to have both diseases at the same time, isn't it?
I think it's becoming more and more known, because I was an author on a plain language summary for United Therapeutics. And United Therapeutics makes an inhaled medication for pulmonary hypertension. And with further research, they determined how much it helped those with pulmonary fibrosis. So this plain language summary that mm-hmm. I was one of the authors was to say, okay, I take this drug too, and it's really helping my pulmonary fibrosis.
So I would like to ask you at this point, I know that you love New Mexico, mm-hmm. but we also are aware that New Mexico ranks quite low in terms of 50 states when it comes to healthcare.
Yes, and that is very true. And it's access to any physicians. Primary care physicians, it's the most difficult.
So we're not talking just about rare diseases here?
No, we aren't just talking about rare. No, absolutely
not. And why is that?
And a lot of it is because we have the highest malpractice insurance, I believe, in the United States, the highest malpractice insurance. And so every legislative session, and we, on every other year, we have a 30 or 60 day legislative session. And you can imagine in a 30 day session, you can't cover a great deal in a 30 day session. But yet they always bring up, because people complain, people are moving out, and large manufacturing companies will not move in because they find that the access is so poor.
But is that related to poverty levels or environmental situation, or what is that called?
It's not, I wouldn't say environmental situation, because we always tout the quality of life in New Mexico. Of our population is on Medicaid. And so that means that physicians that are taking care of Medicaid patients get a lower reimbursement, and they need to try to make it up, let's say, in terms of their private patients. That's fair. That's what they need to do in order to practice medication. So when the reimbursement through the state for Medicaid is so low, and their malpractice is so high, they can't afford to practice.
Okay, that answers that question. Now, I want to go to another topic. You are presenting a talk on Friday, November 14th, Transplant Decisions Navigating the Crossroads. And from what I understand, you are dead set against lung transplant. Can you explain why?
Yes. My reasons for that are really all personal. For one is we do not do transplants, lung transplants in New Mexico. So you have to go. There are, of course, numerous transplant centers, but the closest, and it has an excellent reputation, is in Phoenix. Mm-hmm. St. Joseph's in Phoenix. And so that's where people are referred to. So when you have a transplant, when you go through the evaluation period, they talk about the requirements and what you have to commit to. And you have to have a caregiver that lives with you, because they have to be with you 24/7 for at least 6 months, or they will not approve you for a transplant. That's on a...
Is this the case in other states as well, or specifically
yes,
New Mexico?
No, it's the case in every transplant center has those same requirements. Maybe they may have more, but definitely all the transplant centers.
But isn't
have
it
that.
Correct, and correct me if I'm wrong, but in the case at least of PAH, a lung transplant is the only real cure.
It's the only thing that, because they'll tell you otherwise, you can't, there's no cure for IPF. There's no cure. You're terminal. They'll tell you you're terminal to begin with. And they tell you that if you read anything after you're first diagnosed, which they always tell you not to, it says 3 to 5 years. And so 3 to 5 years, unless you have a lung transplant.
And you were also told that same thing?
3 to 5 years. Well, the physicians are always hesitant to say that. Studies will always say, if you look it up, IPF, they will say the prognosis is that your longevity, is 3 to 5 years. Physicians will say, everyone's different. And that's true. Some people have been newly diagnosed, and if they have a lot of other comorbidities, other things wrong with them, they right. have heart disease and everything, then maybe they last 2 years. But, as I've said, since 2011, and I credit it for, I have a sense of purpose, and I volunteer. I was named Volunteer of the Year for the city of Albuquerque this year.
Congratulations. And you've obviously beat the odds. We have to wrap it up.
Okay.
Any final thoughts?
I would say that if you have an opportunity to support clinical research and clinical trials, because there is not going to be a cure developed possibly in my lifetime. But I have seven brothers and sisters, and there is a genetic component to IPF, not in every case, but I do all of that, everything that I do in terms of research and clinical trials, because I want to see a cure at some time, you know, in the next 20 years, so people don't get this diagnosis.
Hopefully it can be sooner than that.
Yes.
We've been speaking with Karen Smoot, who's an ambassador for the Pulmonary Fibrosis Foundation from Albuquerque, New Mexico. This is Larry Luxner for Rare Disease Advisor.
Be sure to follow the latest news, perspectives, and clinical resources on rare diseases at rarediseaseadvisor.com. Thank you for listening.